Hello, this is Roy Thomas, and you're listening to the Power Cosmic Podcast.
That's right, friends. You've been waiting for the podcast that talks about the things you love. Well, go no further, because you've reached the Power Cosmic Podcast. Each week, legendary Comic-Con promoter Mitch Halleck of the Terrific Con and legendary finder of lost things John Cimino of Saturday Morning Collectibles at the Raynham Flea Market, booth A89 and 90, will talk about the stuff you love. Now sit back and talk about comics, TV, movies, toys, and more. It's the Power Cosmic Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Power Cosmic Podcast. I don't have to tell you who I am because we already said that in the introduction. But just in case you're a little out of touch, I'm Mitchell A.S. Halleck, promoter of the world's greatest Comic-Con called Terrific-Con, happening in a mere couple days by the time you hear this in Uncasville, Connecticut at the Mohegan Sun. Joining me every week, as always, is my friend and yours. You know him, you love him. The man who can find anything. You already heard the introduction about where he is and who he writes for, Mr. John Cimino. Say hello, John.
Hey, 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 hey!
What?
What's the big day today, Mitchy? It's almost Terrific Con.
I know, John. That's the thing. I'm swallowing my vitamin C. I'm trying to get myself back into whatever physical condition I can possibly can for the upcoming show. Want to make sure I'm happy and healthy when I meet the fans. You?
I'm getting ready, Mitch. It's going to be a fun time. We're going to be with my boy, Roy Thomas, and a lot of hijinks, a lot of good times. It's going to be fun. I want to buy, sell, and smile.
Wow. Now, just before we started off, you were all excited because you just watched Netflix's original show, and two of my guests are on that show, and we'll talk about that in a second. You just watched Stranger Things. What did you think of it, John?
Okay, to tell you the truth, you know me, Mitch, I never watch TV. I'll catch the Netflix superhero stuff, or I'll go to see the superhero movies, or an occasional movie that's downloaded onto my computer. But I don't really kind of venture out of there. I'm too busy. I have so much I have to do. But I stumbled onto Stranger Things, which was on the internet for me, and I said, you know what? I heard from some people. They said that was so cool. So I said, you know, let me just watch the first episode while I'm doing my stuff. I fell right into it because it was like the Goonies, Poltergeist. It had so many Lost Boys. It had so much elements. And it was taking place in the 80s. So you had the Dungeons and Dragons. You had the superhero stuff. And they were always talking about X-Men 134. What issue was that, Mitch? I can't get it in the top of my head.
Well, 137 is the famous Phoenix Saga. Where she
right,
kills
was 134 when Wolverine's a solo? Was that 135?
Well, 130, he did attack the Hellfire Club, where he went underground and he just savagely killed everybody in a berserker rage. That was a great issue. It might have been
I can't remember, but they always talked about X-Men 134, like, yeah, I'll trade you my X-Men 134. They talked about Professor X. It was great because it was in the 80s, and you had great, it was so... I was so invested, man, and I binge-watched all 8 episodes, and I said to myself, holy moly, that was good.
So, and here's a little bit of information for you, John. Coming to Terrific-Con on August 18th to the 20th, you will see the young lady who played Barb, Shannon Purser, who disappears in Stranger Things. We never see what happened to Barb.
We do see what happened. She does disappear, and they find her, and she's dead.
Well, is she really? Is she?
Okay. That could be.
I don't know. But the young lady who was in that movie or in that television show actually was just nominated for a Best Actress award.
Which one?
Barb.
Oh, Barb was nominated?
Yeah.
Well, she really? She just was. Wow, all right.
That's fine. Yeah, a lot of people were shocked, but, you know, hey, congratulations to the young lady. We'll see if she wins.
Absolutely, because I'm just saying, she didn't have, I'll tell you, her friend, like the young sister of the star, the young boy,
yeah.
who had the the bad 80s boyfriend, and then you think that you're going to get together with the other. I thought she did a great job. To be honest with you, I thought everybody did a good job. I thought the acting was off the, like, was great. I was invested. And the little girl who was the star that, number 11 is what they called her. I thought she was phenomenal too. And I love how they even had a little love interest with the little boy and her. And, like, that was touching. I was happy because they're on the bikes. You know, it reminded me when I was a kid. I mean, if I have to remember when I was a kid, like, Mitch, we always do this. I know you're a little before me, so yours was like the 70s. But mine was like those mid-early 80s. And when she turned on the TV and you saw the commercials, you saw He-Man. It just reminded me on my bikes when I was with some friends. And life was a lot more innocent. And you know how they used their, like, the ham radios or the...
All of it. No, I fell in love with that whole show. That exactly reminded me of the 80s growing up. I thought they did a very, very well-researched and, like you said, it was very Steven Spielberg, Stephen King-like stories. It captured the spirit of the 80s perfectly.
Yeah, I felt a little It was in there, too.
And
you can tell, like, the right, even Winona Ryder, like, I think, you know, you didn't hear from her after. Remember that awards when they were winning the awards and Winona had that little druggy breakdown? Because it was funny, like, she did fantastic, and like I said, I remember when they were saying that they were downstairs playing the Dungeons and Dragons for like 10 hours. I can remember, me and my friends, when I used to go to the Cape, I'm going to throw out these names, they're not going to mean anything to anybody, but it was Ben, it was friggin' Rob, Rob's little brother, me, my brother, we would go in this closet, and we would play Dungeons and Dragons for literally hours and hours and hours, and I really got a little choked up. And plus, there was one part when they're like, the special service guys were taking things out of the room they were saying, but they had that dungeon game.
Yeah,
I remember that game. Yeah, that was great.
See, they were very well researched. They knew what they were doing. They weren't
I didn't know. You know, I remember you advertising her, but you know, I never watched Stranger Things, so it never really appealed to me. And I didn't really care. But now it's kind of like, oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, and then the other guy who's in it, who's also going to be at Terrificon, who was in Guardians of the Galaxy, was the guy that was in the neighbor that was in the house. I can't remember his character's name, Mr. So and So. He was on, like, really briefly. He was this creepy neighbor guy in Guardians of the Galaxy who's coming to my show. He's in that.
Oh, no! And he gets shot. No, he was the guy that worked at the, at the restaurant where that little girl.
Finds 11.
What's up?
The guy that finds 11 hiding in his storeroom.
Yeah. He's a restaurant. He's like,
all right, we're gonna look that up here on the great old internet while you're talking to me right here, because I thought he was the sheriff's gonna be playing Hellboy in the new Hellboy movies. They just relaunched it. Let's see, Stranger Things episodes guide, cast and crew. Here we go. Let's see, Matthew Modine. He was in it. He was the FBI secret agent guy.
He's the one, he's in a ton of movies.
Yeah, well, he used to be a big thing in the 80s, too, so it was really nice how they kind of brought some 80s people into it. I'm looking down the credit list now for Chris Sullivan is the guy's name that played Taserface. He's a big guy. He's like 6'5".
Yeah, the chubby kid with that, but that's when you got, you had those cute characters. All those kids were cute, like, you know, they really, they had a crush on this. It was such an 80s, they had such an 80s vibe on that. It was fantastic.
Huh. I can't find him on the credits, though. Though he's in the show. I don't know who he played. You think he was the guy that was the diner owner, huh?
Yeah, it was him, because now that you say it...
Here we go. Chris Sullivan. He played Benny Hammond. Was that the guy's name? Benny?
Benny Burgers. It was Benny's Burger.
Oh, yeah, that's him. He was Benny... Yeah, that's him. Wow. All right, so I remember him more than I thought I did. Yeah, it says right here. He was in two episodes. Yeah, that's it. Stranger Things.
X-Men, I'm looking at it right now. X-Men 134 is when the Heroes and the Hellfire.
It must have been when Wolverine attacked the Hellfire Club.
Excuse me?
It must have been when Wolverine went in and attacked.
That's actually the issue after. 130. It's right before the Dark Phoenix saga. It's when they're squaring off.
I'm looking at the cover right now. I'm looking at it. It came out June 10th, 1980. Here's a description of it. Cyclops survived. The X-Men retaliate against the Hellfire Club.
133 is Wolverine alone, the famous Wolverine.
When he's in the
is when they're going after the Hellfire Club.
Yeah, I have no idea why they wanted 134 other than the cover.
Yeah, I thought they would say 133 because, let's be honest, when we were kids, that issue was unbelievable.
Oh yeah, that's when Wolverine went nuts. It was like, oh my God, he killed everybody.
Yeah, that was like his first solo thing, and everybody fell in love with Wolverine after that. So I mean, I'm surprised they didn't say. Maybe that was the directors or the something brothers. What are they called? The Duffer brothers, the guys who written and directed that stuff.
Stranger Things. That was
So that could have been Duffer. Matt, favorite issue when they were kids.
Matt Duffer and his brother Ross Duffer.
Yeah, the Duffer brothers. So I mean, because that issue, because I thought in my head it was that solo Wolverine, but it was the issue after. Yeah, that was good stuff, Mitch. I'm happy that they're going to be at your show because I didn't put two and two together. So yeah.
Well, Barb has kind of got like a cult following. If you go out there, there's like shirts of her. They have those little Funko Pops of her. Everybody loves Barb, man.
Wow, that's interesting because I didn't really put much on Barb. I like the sister, like Barb's friend.
I think more people out there identify with Barb because she's like, you know, the little nerdy type in the background, the friend.
Okay, I can see that. And the other, I was just upset. I got to throw this out there. I wanted the sister girl who goes back to the 80s kid, the one that gets beaten up by the kid who had the camera, like the Will's older brother. I wanted that sister to go to him. And they have like an unspoken crush or maybe a liking for each other. But she went back to that 80s guy, and I was so pissed about that. So just showed you how invested I was on that stupid show.
It makes me think of the film, you're not going to remember this movie, but maybe you will. The Last American Virgin. You ever see that movie?
No.
Oh, it was an 80s movie. Very, very, you know, cult movie, I would guess. It wasn't a big deal. But what happens is this girl, there's the nebbish guy who loves this, you know, the cheerleader of the school, the popular girl. And she's, of course, dating the jock guy. So what happens is he loves her from afar. She gets pregnant. He actually takes her to get an abortion. I mean, this is really big stuff in the 80s. And he takes her there and he holds her hand and he takes care of her. And, you know, she goes through the surgery and all that stuff. And what do you think happens at the end? Do you think she ends up with the loser guy who helped her out when she needed him? Or she goes back
to... I'm saying she doesn't.
She goes right back to the jock boyfriend that got her pregnant.
I was so mad about that.
Like, yeah, no, but I'm just saying that's the movie. And at the end, the kid is driving away with tears in his eyes because he knocks on the door to get her. And there she is with the other guy. And he gets in the car. And I can't remember. I think it was a Lionel Richie song. And he's just... Because, again, so 80s. He's driving away and you hear the radio playing. It was at its time, The Last American Virgin was a cult classic. But
and Mitch, I'm gonna throw this out with Stranger Things. What I loved about it, it wasn't pretentious. The pretentious stuff that we see today, like it wasn't so diversified. It was like you had that one black kid, you had a bunch of white guys, and like it was. I don't know. It was kind of like there was none of that pretentious stuff thrown down your throat. That's why I think it felt like a real 80s movie. I really liked it. But did you see any of that when you remember?
No. Like I said, it was total 80s. I mean, the whole thing was like a slice of life. I mean, I could everything. That's why I think so many people.
Like a little ET was in there, you know, when they were running from the vans on their bikes and stuff. It was cool, man.
I think that's why so many people were drawn to it. What?
I said I give it 5 stars, 5 Mickeys up.
I think that's why so many people enjoyed it is because it looked so much like things that they remember. I was surprised little kids liked it. You know, I mean, it's fine for people in their 40s and 50s that remember the 80s, but younger kids really liked it, teenagers, you know?
Well, it was also a more innocent time, too, like no cell phone. You know, like, it made me remember, like, those days when I really, that's why I got invested. The clothes, everything was perfect. Like the houses, the rugs, the furniture, it was all very
and
well.
And did you like when the guy had to do research, the detective? There was no internet, so he had to go to
He goes to the library and goes to the paper.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember starting college in the early 90s, and I had to do that to look up articles for like a, yeah, oh, my God, I totally forgot about that.
Oh, my God, that was life. I remember that's just the way you did things back in the day, you know? You had to go do your research. You had to go to the library. You had to read. Yeah. You actually had to read and cross-reference and try to find stuff. You couldn't just type it in on your phone.
Let me ask you this, Mitch. Is another season going to be coming soon?
Is who?
I said, is the next season going to be coming?
Oh, it starts on Halloween this year, Halloween night, part two.
Oh, I'm so excited. Now I'm like, you know, we were talking about the superhero stuff and how we're invested in that, and that's the only thing I kind of look forward to. And sometimes I see a movie and it's sometimes I love it, sometimes I don't, whatever. But that's all I kind of look forward to. It's always kind of cool to look forward like to something else, especially me because I'm so narrow-minded. I don't have time for this stuff, all this crap. But I'm kind of excited to look forward to something that's a little off the mark. Now, really quickly, Mitch, maybe you'll know better than me. Are they going to start a whole new story, or is it going to be those same actors and stuff?
Oh, it's the same kids. It's the same kids. So
okay, I hope it's not too much of a good thing, because I thought maybe they'd start a new, like, new characters, new everything, and then there they go. But if they're going to start the same things, I just don't want to get bored of the characters, you know?
Well, I would have liked it if they did an anthology, to be honest with you. If they just went on to new stories, but I guess they're not.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping. Like, okay, that's that story, that universe, that's gone now. Now it's going to start something else. But, okay, well, you know what, I'm not going to deny it. I'm going to watch it, but I hope it's not too much of a good thing, because I want to remember those characters for that, you
yeah,
know? Like,
yeah,
that
yeah.
was great.
Yeah. But we will see. We will see.
Interesting.
But anyway, we were going to talk about speaking of Netflix, this is a perfect tie-in. Look at you, Johnny, on focus, on point. One of the other things that is premiering the weekend of Terrificon on August 18th is another Netflix special. It would be The Defenders, which is the uniting of the four miniseries, or whatever you want to call them, series on Netflix. We have Daredevil, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, and Jessica Jones coming together to form their version of the Defenders, a bunch of outcast heroes united to fight an evil played by Sigourney Weaver, who's another 80s kind of throwback, if you will. So, what do you think of the Defenders, Johnny? Let's go through the history of the Defenders for our folks who might not remember who they are.
Okay, let's go way back. Let's go back to the early 70s when Stan Lee asked Roy Thomas to put the Hulk in a group. That's all he gave him. And Roy went to the drawing board and said, you know, how am I going to get the Hulk in a group? The Hulk's kind of this outcast. So then he thought, why don't I get a bunch of outcast heroes and put them all together? We put them all together to get a group. So the Defenders was a group of non-heroes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And what makes that interesting, too, is that's what the Defenders premise is about, like, even in the show there on Netflix, because they're all outcast heroes. You know, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, they're all kind of these street guys, they're all these single entities, and they all come together for a greater good, which is the premise of what the Defenders is. But people don't realize this, that the Defenders first started in actually Doctor Strange 183 when he got together with Submariner. And then from there, it became Submariner 22, where Doctor Strange and Submariner were together again. And then it was in issue 34 and 35 of the Submariner where the Hulk, the Submariner, and still the Surfer get together. And then after that, we come to Hulk 126, where the Hulk and Doctor Strange get together. And they're all kind of like, it's all kind of like, they all have to come together by something that's going on, like, and they're getting to know each other, but it's almost something like off-Earth.
Yeah.
And then after that, Marvel feature 1 through 3, which is with a Hulk, Submariner, and Doctor Strange get together. And they always reference back to those other issues. All of those written by Roy Thomas.
Right.
And then that premise got so good that they started the Defenders issues from there, from the 70s, and Roy put Steve Englehart on the series, and he wrote it for a good chunk of a while, which, let's not forget, Steve Englehart is also the guy that came up with the Defenders Avengers War, which he was writing the Avengers too, Englehart, and I think Roy put him on the Defenders because he could write great a group of heroes. And that was the first big crossover. I don't know if you remember that, when they were all looking for these pieces of, I forget what it was, but a Defender would fight an Avenger, and the famous Defenders 10, when the Hulk fought the Four. But Steve Englehart wrote that, and like 4 or 5 issues all crossed over with each other. So that is basically the comic history of the Defenders. It was basically born, bred, and whatever made by Roy Thomas.
Well, and again, not to toot our own horn, if you want to meet the man himself, Roy, and you want to meet Steve Englehart, where would a comic book fan go on the East Coast or anywhere in the United States to see these two creators together? Where, Johnny?
They would go to Terrificon, Mitchie.
They would go to Terrificon at the Mohegan Sun, August 18th to the 20th. Tickets on sale right now. Isn't that an amazing thing? You can see the actors from Stranger Things, the people who brought the Defenders, and we're not done yet, Johnny. You could also meet the man who plays Iron Fist, Finn Jones, and the young lady who plays Colleen Wing, his girlfriend, Jessica Henwick, at Terrificon. So Roy will be in the presence of his own living creation, his own flesh and blood representation, because as we all know, Roy Thomas created Iron Fist.
Well, Roy and Gil Kane. Yeah, and what's funny, Mitch, this is the first time that's ever happened. This is, like, Roy and that actor, whatever.
Finn Jones.
Yeah, but they've never been together before.
No.
This is it. So this could be a great time to, you know, maybe get your Marvel premiere. What is it, 13?
15, I think. First appearance of Iron Fist. I just bought it the other day on eBay just to get it signed by Roy and Finn Jones. Yep, I did. I broke down and spent
that
money.
That would be a great picture. You get a picture of that, get it signed by Roy.
And them holding the book.
What's up?
A picture of the two of them holding the book.
Yeah, that would be great.
Right?
And I think, that's... And Mitch, let's throw a little more advertisement out for Terrificon out there. Roy's also going to be on another panel, which is going to be the only time ever. You tell us that one.
That would be the Star Wars panel, because Howard Chaykin, legendary Cumrugrin, I can't pronounce that, he of artist fame was the artist on the Star Wars movie adaptation in 1977, with Roy Thomas writing it, as they brought George Lucas's Star Wars, the epic space fantasy film, to the pages of a Marvel comic book. And there are those who say the sales of that comic book is what saved Marvel that year from bankruptcy. Is that not true, John?
And Mitch, remember we were talking on the phone yesterday, and I got a quick email from Mr. Roy, my buddy Roy, and he said that Howard got an offer to do some Star Wars, big Star Wars podcasts and all this stuff, and he turned it down because he absolutely hates the whole Star Wars thing, doesn't really care about the comics and the adulation he gets from it, and, you know, and I got to kind of agree with Mr. Chaykin on that because I'm not a big fan. But Roy was saying that, my gosh, like, and he's going to be at Terrificon, so this is like, Mitch, you pulled something out of your little magic cap. How come?
Well, it's because Mr. Chaykin and I have a bizarre history. I met him back in 1991, I think it was, or 92. And it was at a comic book convention in New York City. And I was at the time out of college, and I had my own comic book called Mitch and Merle. It was kind of like a Jay and Silent Bob type of story before Kevin Smith even came on the scene. And I was trying to get it printed and published, and there was no internet back then, so it wasn't easy to find answers. So I was in line to speak to Howard Chaykin. He was there. They had a brand new series of books. I think it was called Bravura was the publisher. And it was Jim Starlin, Walt Simonson, I believe, Howard Chaykin, and a bunch of other guys. They had their own titles. I remember this. And not well, actually. So I was in line to talk to Howard, and I had the book with me. And I started talking to him, and I said, hey, how do you get an agent? How do you get publishing rights? How do you get residuals? How do you get royalty checks? And I was just all about the business. And Howard said, listen, if you're not creating artwork or books just for the love of it, then you're nothing but a whore. You've taken your abilities and your talents and you're putting them out on the street and you want people to pay you money for your talent. And if you're doing something like that, you're a prostitute. And I got offended. And I said, well, what are you doing? Because at the time he was sitting at the table signing books that people were buying. And he says, well, I'm a creator. I said, well, you're selling what you've just created for a price. So you're a whore too. And we just know what your price tag is. So he started yelling at me. He goes, get out of here. Get out of here. So I had a resentment for him from the conversation for like a good 15 to 20 years. So I was at Baltimore Comic Con and I had to interview him for the IndieCast, which is another podcast I'm on about Raiders of the Lost Ark and Indiana Jones, because Howard worked on some Indiana Jones comic books for Marvel. So before we sat down, I told him that. And he started laughing. He didn't remember it. He said, I couldn't believe you wasted all that energy hating me for something I don't even remember doing. And what's your problem? And I said, well, I got to tell you, you were on my top 10 hated guy list. And he said, oh, geez, I'm so sorry about that. The next day, he was sitting next to Klaus Janson, and Klaus started laughing about it, and he offered to buy me breakfast the next day. And, you know, ever since then, it's been, kind of friendly. And he was supposed to come to Terrificon last year, but unfortunately he had a conflict with another convention nearby, and he couldn't get out of it, so he made good, and he came this year. And when it came time to doing a Star Wars panel, because this is the 40th anniversary of Star Wars this year and that Marvel comic, I said, I have Roy Thomas here. You're going to be here. Can we get the two of you on a panel? And he said to me, I've never done this before. I wouldn't do it for New York Comic Con. I wouldn't do it for San Diego Comic Con. But for you, Mitchie, I will do it. So I'm calling in a favor, and he's being nice enough to sit on a panel, and he's going to talk about Star Wars for the first time with Roy Thomas. The last time these two guys were together about Star Wars was 1976 at the San Diego Comic Con with another gentleman named Charles Lippincott, who worked for George Lucas, and they were desperately trying to promote the upcoming Star Wars movie to fans in attendance there because no one had heard about it, no one knew what it was going to be, and nobody wanted to care about it. In fact, the very first Star Wars poster ever was done by Howard Chaykin. It's a variant of his cover of that book, and they were selling it for $1. And they could not give that poster away. And even better, Johnny, they were all wearing this bright yellow t-shirt that said, and it had some primitive artwork on it from Ralph McQuarrie, who was a conceptual artist that worked for George Lucas. It wasn't called Star Wars. It said The Star Wars. That was the title, The Star Wars. And if I'm not wrong, there was only 25 of those t-shirts made up. They were yellow with red ink on them. Roy still has that shirt, right?
Only
14 of them. So that's how rare. You should have Roy bring that shirt and hold it up with Howard. That would be something.
Well, it was also called, but it was called The Star Wars, but it was also called, underneath that, it was called A Sci-Fi Fantasy.
There you go.
Yeah, and it was before, and George Lucas gave those specifically just to the editors of Marvel. So Lucas had one, and
Mark Hamill has one.
Yeah, Mark Hamill has one. He gave them to only a short, but there's only 14 of those made. and the Marvel, a lot of the Marvel staff had one, and I'm sure a lot of them got lost to the ages, but Roy still has his, and that's something we can, you know what, maybe throw this out at you, Mitch. I'm gonna tell Roy, I'm gonna tell him to bring it. He has to send me a couple things before the show, and maybe he can send me that shirt, and I can get it all nicey for you, and maybe get that, because I know he'll do it. So let me look into that. So here's an exclusive, guys. Maybe that shirt will be there too.
A rarity for Star Wars fans, and they're obsessive. Those Star Wars fans, they will go ape crazy if they see.
Just so I want people to know, I will be taking pictures of that that panel. And Roy wants to put those pictures in Alter Ego because he knows this is a big deal for him and Howard to actually be doing this together. And he would like it to be recorded. So, Mitch, I don't know if you can talk to the powers that be and have that recorded because he wants the transcripts to put that in an upcoming issue of Alter Ego because this is such a big deal. So Terrific Con is going to be a big deal, Mitchie.
And it's also hosted by Ryder Windham, who is a Star Wars author for many years on comic books and written a lot of. He's coming down just for this event. I asked him to moderate it, and he said he'd be more than happy to. So Mr. Ryder Windham will be the moderator of that panel. I myself wanted to moderate it. But I'll pop into it. I mean, that's the problem. When I run the show, I can't be everywhere. I mean, I try to do a couple panels every year. Usually I do the Comic Book Men panel, but unfortunately they can't be there this year. They have to go film out in Seattle last minute for their show, so they won't be here. But usually I host that panel. That's one of my favorite ones to do. I hosted the one with Roy a couple years ago, but I was interrupted during the panel by another guest who had problems with his panel. It was just crazy. It's hard to run the ship and go, hang around and hang out with the passengers and all that stuff while you're doing it. It's not easy, Johnny. It's not easy.
I think Terrific Con, not to toot the Terrific Con horn, but that's the price of admission right there. I mean, there's a lot of.
Oh, yeah.
We also got Spider-Man's 55th anniversary, and we also got Jack Kirby's 100th.
We will have Roy will be talking about what it was like to work with Jack Kirby,
it's a great time. It's a great time because let's throw this out there. Spider-Man's 55th is in August, so I mean, like, it's perfect, isn't? And now Star Wars 40th is it in August?
It was May 25th, so it's close.
Okay.
So, but the thing of it is, there's a lot going on. I had Jim Simon. Joe Simon's son, Joe Simon, of course, one of the co-creators of Captain America, and Joe isn't with us, and neither is Jack, but Jim Simon was going to come down and talk about Jack Kirby and his dad and what it was like, but unfortunately things couldn't happen, and we can't get Jim to come down this year because of some last-minute scheduling stuff. But that's the thing. I mean, I'm a comic book fan, and you know that, and anybody listening to this knows, I go out of my way to try to bring a show together that unites a lot of rarities. And if you're an average guy who just likes comic books, you might not know who Roy Thomas is or Howard Chaykin or anything. But if you're a true fan, you know who these guys are. You know who the Star Wars comic book was and who Joe Simon was and all that. I mean, that's what this show's about. I do have the celebrities we mentioned. From Stranger Things.
When I talk to new people in the business, you're right. They might not know who Roy Thomas is or Howard Chaykin is, but you know their characters. Like, I always say that when I talk to people, like, oh, do you know this guy? And they were like, no. I go, but do you know this character? Yeah. Well, then you know that guy. And it's always good to lift the veil and let people, especially the young people, understand who these people are. Because let's be honest, they're getting older. And they might not be with us for that much longer because a lot of these guys are going. Like, we had Fabulous Flo just passed away.
Yeah, Flo Steinberg just died, yeah. I say that all the time, too. You don't want to be morbid about it, but it is a fact of life. This is the few chances you're going to get to see some of these people. It's not like they live down the street. It's not like they're in Connecticut or wherever we are all the time. So make sure you go and see them now,
Yeah, and in 20 years, who knows? Because a lot of these people are being retired, too. You got you got some that are still out there, but they're not doing shows anymore, like Sal Buscema, John Romita Sr. I mean, like, they're not going to do shows, and, you know, how long are they going to be around for? So at least Terrificon, you know, we celebrate those guys.
Absolutely, and absolutely.
And it's always good to bring awareness to the younger generation that knows the heroes, loves the stories. Sure, they may like the contemporary stories and all that stuff, but you always got to go back to the creators.
You got to honor the past, Johnny. You got to honor the past. You do, and that's what it's all about. I mean, and I'm fortunate. I'm glad to put this show on, like we say every year. I pay for this out of my own pocket. I'm not a millionaire. I'm not a rich man. I'm not a corporation. I do this stuff for the love of it all. I'm probably one of the few promoters out there. You know what else I can think of? Local guy, Mike Carbonaro. Mike's a fan of Marvel and all that stuff from day one, and he's another guy. I mean, there's not a lot of us left out there that just do this for the love of it, you know?
And the funny thing is Mike Carbonaro still out there? I mean, he's alive, but is he really?
Oh, stop it. But no, he, I mean, deep down, there's, you know, Mike's a true fan. And a lot of these guys, I mean, we get together, you, me, Keith, we just had Plastic City. That, you know, we're sitting here talking about this at 8 in the morning on the podcast and stuff. It's all about the love of comics. I mean, that's what it really is. It comes down to that.
Well, let me ask you this, Mitch. Would you be putting yourself this much stress and all that if it wasn't something you loved?
The fact I had walking pneumonia and driving around to these shows and doing all this stuff, yeah, I could be some of these other shows that hire a team of people that go out there and promote it. But you know what the greatest thing is? I have you guys. I have you, John Cimino, promoting my show at his booth every week at the Radium Flea Market, booth A89 and 90. I have guys like Scott Martin out there who love the show, who wear the Terrificon t-shirt when they go to other conventions and stuff. I have such a great group of friends and fans of these shows that go out there and just like they promote it. They want it to keep it going and stuff. So I'm indebted to all these folks for all the support that happens out there. So I owe it to them. So I don't mind it. Yes, it wasn't fun not breathing a couple days ago, but I don't mind going out there every weekend and staying up till 2 a.m. doing the website. As we're speaking now, I'm making a graphic that'll be up on the website in a couple minutes for the Stranger Things actors, because you had me going about that. I said, you know, I should do something to promote the fact that they're both going to be there. So that's what I'm doing right now. So, yeah. I love doing this stuff, John. I wouldn't do any other. This is the greatest job I ever had in my life.
And it's funny, like, I've done it all, like, with you. I've had all the comic books. I've had all, like, you know, I've seen the original art. I've had a few of them buying and selling all the toys. But meeting the guys is like, or being friends with the guys, or, like, you know, that's like being in the comic books. Like, you know, all aspects of this industry, we're immersed in right now. Because let's be honest, it's like, would I want to Hulk number one or hang out with Roy Thomas? I love hanging out with Roy Thomas. Yeah. Like, you know, I there's nothing more better, greater than that. It's like, okay, yeah, you can have all these 10.0s or 9.5, and it's like, I've had that crap. I'd rather be with the people now. I'm in a different phase of my life, like, where that's like the top of the mountain for me. And I love how I've been able to, and you, we've been able to be immersed in every aspect of the industry. Like, you create a show, we're hanging out with these guys, we love the comic books, we talk, I mean, it's, what more can we do that?
I gotta tell you, I think just one of these guests that we talk about would be great enough for a convention, to be honest with you. Just to have Roy alone in a room is amazing, let alone Roy Thomas, Ron Lim, Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo, Marv Wolfman. I mean, I can go to, the list is so big. I made it the other day. I was making the program because, again, another thing I do myself, I make the program for the show. I just sit back and I'm counting all the names and I look at my wall of comic books. That wall of comics wouldn't be there if it wasn't for the guys coming to the show. So, again, it's just a simple holy crap moment. You just sit there and go, holy shit, look what I made, you know? So it's fun. And you're right. I have more enjoyment just sitting down with Roy Thomas and the little 9-year-old, the little Mitchie, is just shocked that he's in the presence of this guy, let alone actually sitting there talking to him, you know?
It's funny, like, even talking with Jerry Woodley, like, I remember all his comic books and all that stuff, and it's kind of like, I love hanging out and joking around with Jerry, and, like, poking fun at him, you know, joking, like, that, for me, is like being inside, like, literally the comic, you know, like, when we're having fun with these guys, and it's like, we've basically done everything you could possibly do. Let's be honest. It's like when I'm sitting there and I'm joking around with Roy and we're eating out, I'm kind of like, when we're hanging out and talking, I'm kind of like, dude, I'm talking to all those Hulk comics, like, or all those Conan comics, whatever. It's like that I ever loved, and I find it so funny, and it's like, I would have never believed.
It is amazing. There is part of me. Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I'm always like, wow, because Ordway and I, we hang out every week. We go out for pizza or burgers or whatever. And I'm same thing. I mean, I can close my eyes and remember buying all his comics. And then I go, I never thought I'd see the guy. You know, I know he lived near me. And Mike Zeck, too. Mike Zeck, I grew up with in the 80s, talking about the 80s again. And Mike Zeck was living in the same town as I was, buying his comics at the same store I was. And now I think it's kind of come full circle that I could text him and call him and say, hey, Mike, you getting ready for the show? Is there anything you need? He's like, hey, Mitch, how are you? How's your mom? It's just so, I never thought in a million years this is where it would be. You know, I never thought I'd be here.
Yeah, because we were such fans of these characters and it's like, we're basically the mortals that climbed Mount Olympus, and like we're sitting there with the gods, and it's as being a fan and actually making it a business, like, not just hanging out, like making like a legit business out of it, like making money and like sustainable money. Like, oh my god!
Well, you know, I don't do it. I'm not doing it for that. That's for certain, because I'm no.
No, we're not. But the fact that we can, because it's not like, I know a lot of people. Come on, let's be honest, Mitch. A lot of people will go there. They spend their hard-earned money, maybe spend a lot of money, and then they go back to their real life. For me, you know me, how crazy I am into this. Right. I made this actually my life. Like, this is what I do. And it's like, I would rather do, you could tell me I could do something else and maybe even more money, but I wouldn't take it. I would stay this side, because this is the most fun I've ever had.
Yeah. I agree with you. I hear you wholeheartedly on that one. But anyway, we went all over the place today. I want to talk about the Defenders, so let's try to get that on here before we wrap it up, because we are actually over the limit today. The Defenders, the TV show, though, is not the Defenders we read as kids, but it's the same concept about a bunch of outcasts, correct?
Correct, and they save Earth without ever getting really the recognition for it. You know, they're just underground.
Yeah, so what do you expect from the new TV series? That I was going to try to watch. Don't be surprised if you don't see me watching it right during the middle of the show. My wife's going to kill me, but I'll be sitting in the corner with my computer trying to watch The Defenders.
But, Mitch, I don't want to throw this out there, but were you going to possibly do something with The Defenders thing on a screen?
I was going to try to see if since I got two of the actors that are on the show, I was going to see if we could get them to sit down and watch the show with the fans. I don't know how, but we're going to try it, you know? So.
Yeah, see, because that'll be playing while Terrific Con is up and going, correct?
Yeah, it's going to start that, what is it, 3 in the morning on the East Coast it starts on Netflix, because it's, you know, premieres midnight on the Pacific Coast. So, the Defenders, it's 8 or 9 episodes this time. It's a little shorter than the previous ones, but they're going to be there, so maybe sit down and watch it with them.
I hope it does well. I mean, like, you know, they're pumping this stuff out, and they, you know, the writing on some of the stuff is unbelievable, and, like, you know, but when you get a cast of characters, I think they're going to work well together, and I think they're all going to have a small little part in that big Avengers Infinity War coming out, you know?
Oh, that would be, you think they'll bring them into the Infinity War? You think they'll be in the movie?
I think this is going to happen. I'm going to throw this out there. But you remember in the Infinity Gauntlet when Thanos eradicates half of existence? Remember that?
Right.
Some people from some issues disappeared or something happened?
Yeah.
That's what I think how they're going to appear. Either they're going to disappear, or some tumbling building is going to come down, and they're in the streets, and they're saving like babies and families in the inner street. You get little glimpses like that. That's how I see those appearances. Like, a car is going to crash, and then you just see Luke Cage like save that family. You know, like that's how I think, or maybe some of them are going to disappear. I believe that that's going
to
happen.
So really fast on that screen, you're going to see them real quick.
Yeah, they're not going to have a huge part, but they're going to have glimpses, and I think people are just going to be like, yeah, there they are, you know, like,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
what it's
yeah.
an homage type thing.
Well, we'll have to wait and see. That'll be something. I'm sure they won't tell us at the show if we ask them if they're going to be anything.
Yeah, because they probably already filmed those parts.
Oh, I'm sure that's what I'm saying. I'm sure that's already done. I think they wrapped up production on the Infinity show. I think it's done. I think they're probably working on the special effects now. You know?
Well, I saw that leaked trailer, and it looks really good, you know?
I saw that, too. And then my boy, Ryan Mindnerding, the artist behind all that, again, terrific con plug, he's the one that did this great poster, if you saw it at San Diego Comic-Con. You had to put it together. It was three different pieces, and it had Team Iron Man, Team Captain America, and Thanos in the middle. And when you put it together, you had a poster that had about, I don't know, what, 50 comic book superheroes on that thing? It was a lot.
Oh, and I want to throw this out there to the people listening and stuff, and understanding how invested I am with Roy and trying to get Roy Thomas out there in the world. Now, I know a lot of people know Stan Lee, a lot of people know Jack Kirby, and they know Steve Ditko, but Roy is still an anonymity in the major scope.
Why is that, John? Why is that?
Well, I think it's why, because Roy is more... I mean, he's a wild man, but more in a conservative way, where Stan Lee was just so unbelievably charismatic, and he was the face, and he was the talker, and he was the face of Marvel, and of all comics, that he kind of went into the imagination of the people. So people saw him, like you called him, the Walt Disney of comics. Yeah. They associated Stan Lee with Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, and everybody. But Roy was behind him. But people don't realize how incredibly talented. And if you want to think about talent of writing, Roy was probably the most talented guy to ever come out of Marvel when it comes to writing and putting that stuff together. And he would even, I believe, and I don't think anybody can dispute this, more talented than Stan Lee when it comes to the whole concept of writing it, because let's be honest here, he finished a lot of scripts for Stan Lee that he never got paid for and he never got credit for, and people don't know. But Roy would have been held in such high regards by Stan if he wasn't that good, and by the people who worked all around him. I got to throw that out there. Okay, so Roy also being behind Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, who's created the most enduring characters out of next to them, legitimately and without dispute, that I'm trying to get Roy more appreciated in the movies. Now, if anybody knows, he had his name just or like appeared in the drum riser of in Avengers 2. It was called like the Roy Thomas Band or the Thomases, something like that. But he never had an appearance, and I'm gonna. And Mitch knows about this, and I'm telling everybody out there. I'm trying to get in touch, and I'm trying to get into Marvel Studios in Hollywood to see if we can start getting Roy some big parts in at least some of his characters, because Captain Marvel's coming out, and let's be honest, Roy needs an appearance. You got Rob Liefeld, you got Chris Claremont, you had Walt Simonson. Now these are people that put their mark on those characters, but they didn't create them.
Right.
Some of them, I mean, let's be honest, Chris Claremont, he created a lot of characters, but he didn't create the core of the X-Men. Wolverine was Roy's character.
Yeah.
Wolverine got an appearance even in one of those X-Men. And it's like, I mean, he's a co-creator of Wolverine. Come on. He got the job because Roy gave it to him. And so that bothers me. And it's like, you got even Rob Liefeld with Deadpool. And it's like, come on. Roy Thomas needs to be in those movies, at least a glimpse or at least a background thing, and that's what I'm trying to get. So who? I'm sorry, Mitch. Who's the artist that you're getting, the conceptual artist?
Ryan Mindnerding. So maybe at the show.
I'm talking to him.
Maybe at the
show. I'm just throwing that out there, telling people.
Maybe at the show, you should start. Maybe at the show, you should start a letter writing campaign or have a ballot where people sign up and say, "Get Roy in Infinity War," or something like that, you know?
Yeah, I mean...
Or Captain Marvel. Start a thing. Start a movement.
And that's what I'm trying to do. So just people understand, I'm really going out there with this, and Roy deserves it. And obviously Steve Ditko, but Steve Ditko doesn't care. But Steve didn't create as many characters as Roy. Now, sure, he got Spider-Man and Doctor Strange out of his belt. I'm not going to take anything away from his genius, but from the whole sum. And let's be honest about this, Mitch. After Stan Lee's role and then Roy took over, after Roy Thomas's editor-in-chief stint, how many characters, enduring characters, got created after that?
I don't know. How many?
No, not many. Think about that. Roy's has the next... I mean, think about those. Think of the biggest ones that came out of there. Wolverine, Punisher.
All right. I'm not arguing with you, so get the man his credit. Let's get it going. Stop talking about it. Make it happen, Cap'n. Come on now.
That's right. I can't say this anymore. So I'm doing that, and that's my next big thing. And if I can get Roy onto TV, let's go. That's what. Just a bit part. Come on, things are happening. We even had Nobleman got Bob Kane's and Bill Finger's name on there. So it shows you anything's possible. But Roy is deserving of that just as much as Stan Lee or hell, give me a break.
All right. Well, let's wrap this one up here. Hopefully it's been a good episode. It's been a lot longer. It's almost an hour long. We've talked Stranger Things. We've talked Defenders. We've talked everything. The next episode is going to be a great one. It's going to be about you and me talking about TV dinners from the 70s and 80s. All right. Let's wrap it up because I'm about to have a coughing fit. Say it.
And that's that.
And that's that. Goodbye.
This has been a production of Big Fedora Marketing, LLC. The folks that bring you the terrific Comic-Con, GamerCon, and so much more. Thanks for listening.